welcome to North Shore Sports Night. If it's Monday, it must be North Shore Sports Night. And it is. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell, actually working tonight with the Salem News Sports Writers, and the Salem News Sports Writer podcast will be dropping tomorrow morning around 8 a.m. So thank you for being with us and joining us. We have a technical problem that I have no idea where it came from. We've been using certain software for, I don't know, the last 20 years, and last week it worked great, and this week all of a sudden it's not responsive. So in other words, if you're listening to us on a computer live, that's where it's working. But if you're trying to get us on a device such as an iPhone or whatever, you may not be able to get the player to work. I have no idea why. I'm going to contact support tomorrow, see if we can get it fixed. But at any rate, you know, this whole thing will be up recorded, and it'll be on the website within minutes after the live broadcast. So we'll get there. It's just frustrating. Tim, I don't know if you ever run into that problem with software. Whoever does it, you know, the server, whoever it is, they just change things and don't tell you about it. So you got to go shopping and figure out how to fix it.
Yeah, it's kind of like when my wife changes the locks on the door. And
No, I hope it's not like that.
Try to get in.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, to go search for a key. Nah, but, you know, and it's not the first time it's happened. Bill Proposky is going to hopefully be able to help me out with this, but it's just so frustrating. I mean, last week, we've done the same thing, Tim. It's like tying your shoes, and all of a sudden you tie your shoe, and it doesn't tie. Like, huh? What's going on? So, I don't know. Anyway, we have, I think what's going to be an interesting, fun discussion tonight. Tim, we're going to talk with Sean Driscoll first. And of course the Super Bowls are coming up this weekend. Bill Newell is going to go down there and, to Foxborough at Gillette. And he's going to cover on Saturday three of the games. He's going to cover Kipp Academy versus Hull. That's the Division 8 Super Bowl Saturday at 10 a.m. And then the prep takes on Springfield Central, a powerhouse, at 12:30 for the state championship in D1. And then St. Mary's, we'll be talking with Coach Driscoll in a minute, will be playing Stoneham at 3 o'clock in D6. Wakefield-Milton, that's also an interesting game. We've had connections with Wakefield over the years, and of course, Steve Dombowski coaching Milton. That's a D3 game at 5:30. We're not going to be covering that one, although Bill may be hanging around for a while. And then in D2, late at night, 8 o'clock, it's Catholic Memorial versus King Philip. And, of course, on Friday, local school of interest, two of them actually, North Reading and Shawshin Valley Tech, vie for the D5 crown at 5:30. So this is the first time in a while that you and I won't be going, Tim, for various reasons. Broadcasting the game is kind of nonsensical because of all the video coverage and the outstanding coverage that Kraft Television Productions does. It's kind of useless for us to broadcast on our little website. But to get the post-game videos and interviews, that's important, and Bill's going to do that.
Yeah, I unfortunately ran into one. I got reminded that I had made a family commitment unless I had to alert everybody that I wouldn't be available. And kind of think that I love going up to the Gillette. You know, they did the pre-game meeting where they do the coin toss and all. They did that by Zoom this year.
No.
Because, you know, there's the pandemic still and all, so. But yeah, it's always a great day, and you're right, the Kraft family did such a great job of providing for the media. There's a whole end zone area up on the ninth floor that is a viewing area and broadcast booths that teams rotate through, and he puts on breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yep.
For the media, and it's just a spectacular take.
It is, and you know, I miss it. It's great going down there for one day to be in the pros. It's fantastic. And as you said, the Kraft Productions, the whole staff down there. Bill Newell is telling me it's not working my audio, but it actually is on the computer. I got to let him know. To try a desktop, but anyway.
The last year we went, Rick, we sat where Gil and Gino broadcast from.
That's right. That's right.
And that was memorable. That was great because it was a big poster of Gil and Gino on the wall,
And what was cool too was we were right next door to CBS, the CBS broadcast booth, and I got to talk with the director of Sunday's broadcast, who gave me a CBS football hat, and he showed me all the setup for what's his name, Jim Nansen. Who's the other guy? Troy? No, not Troy.
It used to be John
Romo. Patrick. Romo. Tony Romo. So he showed me that setup, and it was fantastic. But it's such a beautiful stadium, Tim, and we used to broadcast. They used to have us down in one of the end zones in the CBS or in the NFL broadcast rebar. Let me try that again. Replay booth, and this time, as you said, we were in Gino's spot, Gino and Gil, and man, was that nice!
Oh my God!
What's that?
50-yard line.
Yep. It was a thing of beauty. All right, so that's something to look forward to. But as important, we're going to have a lot of pregame information and interviews and photos coming up this week. Bill been working that on all day. He'll be doing it tomorrow. We're going to talk with Coach Driscoll this evening in just a few minutes. And then there will be, again, plenty of pregame stuff, but then Bill will be updating from Gillette and Foxboro on Saturday, and that will be pretty timely stuff as well. And again, if you can't hear us, there's no point in my mentioning it. but if you're listening on a desktop, you should be okay. And again, I have no idea why the software changed. What I haven't touched the code, so I have no idea. But anyway, the other thing is we'll be talking with Mike Grenier at the bottom of the hour. Lots and lots of Celtic stuff to talk around and bat around. Celtics are doing fantastic. The Bruins are doing fantastic. And Tim, I don't know about you, but that was a most entertaining game Thanksgiving night with the Patriots. Frustrating, yes, but encouraging, yes. Discouraging on the defense, maybe. But a fun game to watch, and they had a chance to pull it out, but they couldn't do it. And on balance, Tim, they got a better record than Tim Brady's team does. I mean, Tom Brady's.
Yeah, you know, they showed the next day, I don't think it was that night, but a week or two ago, Kansas City Chiefs, Kelce gets the pass, goes over the goal line, gets hauled back and drops the ball, and the touchdown was awarded.
Let me ask you something, Tim. Here's the thing. If you're running the ball, if you're a running back, okay, you cross the plane and you fumble a millisecond after you cross the plane, or after that ball crosses the plane, it's a touchdown, am I right?
Touchdown.
Okay, he had the ball, he crossed the plane, touchdown.
He crossed the plane.
Pure and simple. And that one, yeah, that was a killer.
Well, several years ago, they changed the rule, because it used to be you had to maintain control the ball to the complete football motion. And I think the coaches got pissed off because players were crossing the goal line in control of the football and then having it declared a fumble or an incomplete pass. And so they changed the rule so that all you have to do is be in control of the ball with the point of the ball going across the goal line.
Mm-hmm. Who was that? Was it Hunter Henry who caught it?
On the field, how does the broadcast crew, how does the former official sitting with them, and how does New York, with an official sitting at the replay machine, not realize that there's a rule change that says that's a touchdown? How do all those people miss that particular call?
Yeah, that was pathetic. And you know, they had the chances. Very, very encouraging performance by Mac Jones. The tight ends every now and then, they tease me, Tim, like on that play. But they tease me in that, oh, man, there's some real potential here. And then it just kind of fizzles out during a game.
Well, the I think the key to the game was Mac Jones, two-step drop, get rid of the ball.
Yep.
Find the man, get rid of the ball. Don't rely on the offensive line to give you any kind of long-term protection, which is what he's been doing, and he's been getting killed. You know, he didn't get sacked. You know, there was no interception. He got the ball out quickly with zip on it to open receivers who then use their athletic skill to make something happen. So that's what he did a lot of watching. They kept kept the game moving quickly so that the ball was out of his hands. You know, and players were able to make plays. Big difference. You're going to see that the rest of the year. teams are going to have to be ready to play speed-up ball against the Patriots the rest of the way.
Well, they let Mac Jones be Mac Jones, and I do remember way, way back when Brady first came in for Drew Bledsoe. Bledsoe was the gunslinger. He was the one throwing at 40, 50 yards downfield 70 times a game. And Brady came in, and it was that dink and dunk stuff. That's what they did with Brady. And, you know, it built his confidence. He became the best in the world, the best ever. And he can, you know, he can challenge anybody, anytime, anywhere still. But it's good to see that they reverted to that and went back to stuff that Mac Jones can actually do without having the protection up front.
Well, that's the key. I mean, if the Lions can't protect him, he's got to get rid of the ball faster.
Yep. And credit to the receivers. I mean, he spread that around to like seven or eight different receivers, and they all had six or seven catches. So it's hopeful. It's hopeful.
Every guy realized the ball could be coming to me, so he's got to have his head turned ASAP. As soon as he gets across the line, everybody's going to be looking for the ball.
Okay, we're going to be looking for Sean Driscoll here in just a minute. We'll take a break. Coach Driscoll has had a tremendous week, and in the a 7 or 9 day period, an amazing time for the St. Mary Spartans football team, what they can experience. And I want to talk to Coach, we'll talk to Coach Driscoll about that and other stuff, as well as Stoneham, in just a second here. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. Break coming up. We'll be back.
Hey, Rick.
Hold on 1 second here.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right. Once again, if it's Monday, it's going to be Coach Sean Driscoll of St. Mary's High School. And Sean, welcome. Congratulations on the Thanksgiving Day win.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Coach, go ahead, Tim.
Hello, John. How are you?
Good, Tim. How you doing?
I'm good. So you had a good turkey day.
Yes, it was good. It was a good weekend overall, and it was great to get out of Fenway with a win and stay healthy.
I want to start with the pomp and circumstance, Coach, of not only a Super Bowl week when so many things are going on, but also the kids going to Fenway Park. I mean, you got high school kids here who are playing at Fenway Park 1 week, and then 9 or 10 days later, they're playing at Gillette Stadium. Tell me what's that? What is that like for the kids, the faculty, the parents? What's that all like?
Well, to finish out your high school career, if you're a senior and you're playing at those two venues, it's pretty special. I don't think it gets any better than that. Obviously, you want to win the two games to make it really special, but at the same time, you look back on it, not too many athletes get to do that, and are fortunate enough to do that. You know, and as far as a school perspective, I think it's great for the school, the community. It's good for our program, and I know the parents are enjoying it.
Tim?
Yep. So, Sean, what becomes your preparation schedule for the game? Everything stayed the same?
It was a fast crash course. After we finished up with Rockland on Friday, we had to get right into Austin prep on the Sunday, gave the kids Saturday off, went through the game plan. Coaches had to put some overtime in. Went through the game plan on Sunday. You know, practice on Monday and Tuesday was fairly light in recovery. Still didn't give us a regular amount of time to recover. So it was not a lot of contact to say those 2 days. And it was always concerning. And plus, you know, they had some nicks and scrapes from Friday. We just finished a Rockland game with a very physical Rockland game. So I was proud of the way the kids stepped up for Wednesday and really competed.
What was the game like in terms of who you played, who you got onto the field? Because 34-21, you know, Austin Prep made some noise.
Yeah, they did. We, you know, it was 27-7 in the game at one point, and we started rotating some guys through, which was great to be able to do. But we, you know, we kept our regular guys in for probably a good three quarters. They scored a late touchdown with no time left in the game, but I was really happy in how we controlled the game, to be honest with you. I think we controlled it from start pretty much to midway through the third quarter, which was good. And we gave us a chance to get some a younger freshman and sophomores in the game, which was great. But I think the Austin Prep, we will not be playing them again because of the league change and them going to the prep school world.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a little bit of a future there. I think they got a young team and they have, you know, good coaching staff, so they'll get better in their league. But and as far as we go, going into the game, we wanted to get a win, obviously, and get out of there hopefully healthy and ready to go so we can start preparing for the big one.
Coach, you got a mid-afternoon game, and that seems about probably, for a lot of the kids, the best time to play because you're not up early. You know, you're not getting out of bed, getting on the bus, riding down there. You get a chance to basically get together with the kids, Get down to Foxborough, relax before the game, and it's not that late game where you're hanging around and it just sort of wears on you as you wait for the game. You seem to be in the perfect time slot.
Yeah, I think it's a great time slot. I mean, we are following, you know, a classic matchup with the Prep and Springfield Central, so they're playing before us. But, yeah, I think it gives us a chance to have our regular game day routine that we would have. I know it's 3 o'clock instead of, you know, 6:30 when we normally play our games, and it's a Saturday. So it'll give us some time to get together, get our walkthrough in, you know, late morning before we get on the bus and get everything ready to go, and we should be feeling good getting down there. And then I think it's a great time.
Sean, talk about a classic matchup. I mean, St. Mary's and Stoneham, you know, Stoneham not too far outside of the area. Bob Almeida, I mean, a legendary coach. Tell me what's it feel like? What do you tell the kids about this game? Because this has the potential to be a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the best matchups on the board. You know, Coach Almeida's done a great job over the years, any place he was, you know. And they play a very, very physical style of football, and they try to control the line of scrimmage. And they've really done a nice job. And that's a team that's gotten better if you watch them the first week of the season and watch them on Thanksgiving. You see that, like most teams, they usually get better as the season goes on. This team is very physical, and they run an offense, doesn't really throw a lot at you with schemes and everything, but they just play a real physical and really try to beat you up and get the big play.
We've had the opportunity, and we're not doing it this year, of broadcasting the Super Bowl games and the experience for all those individuals who had the opportunity to broadcast from various booths around the stadium is a lot of fun. And the last one we did, we got actually to sit in the booth where Gil and Gino sat for so many years together broadcasting, and That made it quite memorable for us. What's going to be the memorable thing for you and your team?
Well, I think going back, we were in it in 2018. We came up short, and I had some kids on this team that were in eighth grade then that were part of the program a little bit. And I think one of the memorable part for us will be, it is almost like it's going to be, you know, one way or the other, win, lose, or draw, it's going to be our last game together. And I've been with these kids, you know, a long time, especially the senior group. So that's going to be special in itself, regardless where we play. But I think knowing on how they got to where they are and how they competed throughout the years here, I think is going to be the special thing for me. And to finish it up at Gillette, it's a, you know, a special place. And I think the kids will always remember this that day going forward.
I think another thing, Coach, that I think they're going to remember are the two games you played in September, because honest to God, I don't know how Bishop Feehan ever lost a game, and you beat them, and then you come back the next week and lose a really close one to Fenwick. So if you look back on those two games, what did that mean in terms of team building for your guys?
Well, I think the Feehan win was obviously a very big win, and we've had success over the years against them at times, and we made some key plays late in the game, big punt return to close it out with 2 minutes to go. I think our athleticism showed at the end, and competing today with our kids in the Feehan game. You know, and then we get into a Fenwick game, to be quite honest with you. We gave it away at the end, fumbling late, minute something left to go in the game, and trying to use their last time out. We fumble the ball, they go down and score and tie it up. I think, to be honest, that loss might have been one of the better things for us when you go back and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
It really talked about how we had to finish games and how we had to compete to the end and not make that key mistake. I think that was key, and I think the kids really bought in and realized now, okay, we got to play with a sense of urgency. We can't lose another game. And that was the goal after that loss, that we couldn't obviously go undefeated, but now we got to run the table to make it work, and they're in position to reach that goal. So it's good to see.
I know, on media day that I used to attend for all of us to get the interviews, and we all get to get down on the field and to look up to the stands and look from one end to the other and think, well, here's what all takes place on a Sunday afternoon, all the mayhem and the 60,000+ people up there screaming like fools and everything, and it just it's an amazing experience, again, just to be on the field and look up there, but to actually run around and play the game with the pros play is going to be something those kids will never ever forget.
Yeah, and I think you look back at last week playing at Fenway, obviously the same thing, not as big as a place, but there's a lot of history in there, in football history that goes back, a long time ago with the Boston Patriots and stuff, and now you go up to Gillette and the legends that we've had over the years there since they opened that place. I think it's another special place, and when you walk out there and you look around, it is a special moment, and I think our kids are going to enjoy that as well.
Were there any photo opportunities and stuff like that at Fenway? Anything special going on besides the game itself?
Well, just some team stuff earlier. We got to do some stuff a little bit after. They were really good hosts, and it really was a good moment for our kids, the way they treated us and stuff. So there was some opportunities before and after the game,
mm-hmm.
for some photos.
John, when will your day start on Super Bowl Saturday?
What's that? I'm sorry, I lost you.
When will the day start for you and the team?
Oh well, if I can sleep the night before, it's probably going to start then. we'll be back at our school before we go. We'll have our team pregame meal breakfast before we go and get our walkthrough and get in the bus and go. That's how it'll start. But I know a lot of our kids are going to be nervous, and my theory is if you're nervous, that means you're ready. So let's hope they are a little nervous.
I think the butterflies, I call them positive stress. When you look at this team, Coach, every team, it seems, has its own identity. Whenever I ask a coach about their team at the end of the year, they can look back on it, and there's something that defines the team as a whole. What about these guys? Because obviously they're special, and you just mentioned that the loss to Fenwick sort of motivated them internally. When you look at these guys, how do you classify this team? How would you look back on them? And let's, before the Super Bowl game, let's look at this season in its entirety. 11-1 is outstanding in its own right.
Yes, 11-1 and a chance to get to 12-1 would be outstanding. At the end of the year, you look back, and I was just telling my coaching staff tonight, actually, I said, we have some really, really, and this is what sticks out in my mind, we ask our kids to compete. Our kids compete all the time. They're very competitive athletes. They get after it hard in practice, obviously in the game. And that's a good feature, because that's going to lead to stuff down the road for them that's a life lesson where you're always going to be competing regardless what you do in life afterwards. And that's what we try to sell and get them to buy into, and this team has bought into it from day one.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
I keep getting questions and looming. I don't know. I got to start taking something. Rick, pick me up.
Okay. Now, the thing, the whole thing is, Tim was mentioning that you had to do the coin toss. I've done that before. The coin toss on Zoom. Did the kids, have they been able to go down to Gillette? Will you be going to Gillette prior to the game?
No. They used to have a thing on Mondays, I believe. This week would have been, today, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have that anymore for whatever the reasons are. They don't have it. It was always a good thing. You had the coin flip. But they really don't need the coin flip now because everything is done based on seeds with the new playoff format. So Stoneham being seed, the number one seed, and we're the three seed. So that stuff kind of takes care of itself.
Okay. And Tim,
toss at the game.
Tim, you got to meet Andre Tippett, didn't you?
First year I was with Andre. I had an opportunity to ask him to do an interview with me, and he was gracious enough. And we sat over to the side of the room, and I was like a little kid just mesmerized, looking at this absolute giant of a man. And the nicest, politest individual gave me as much time as I wanted, asking him questions. And I was just like shivering, thinking, I would never want to be hit by this man. Oh, my God. He was massive.
Have you seen him in person, Sean?
Oh yes, I met him a few times. He's a nice man. He's a nice man, and he does a great job for them in the community relations department now, I believe. He's very, very nice man. I think the same thing. Imagine this guy chasing you down on the field.
No.
I'm blindsiding you as a quarterback.
Oh my God. No.
Yeah.
Those guys. Oh, it's amazing. Coach, this has been great. I hope we can talk again next week, one more time. But, in the meantime, congratulations on doing such a great job as a teacher for these guys. I'm sure you're proud of your staff as well. Again, any final thoughts on the season to this point?
Yeah, obviously it's been a good season. It's so far, and it's going to be a memorable one either way.
Mm-hmm.
But really appreciate of everyone's effort from the coaching staff and the players mostly, and you're just looking forward to hopefully closing this out on a positive note and give them long-lasting memory.
Absolutely. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time these Monday nights. It's become a regular part of my routine. I appreciate it. And good luck. We're going to be watching from afar, but I will be watching.
Thank you. I really appreciate you guys, and talk soon.
You bet.
John, good luck, brother.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Take care, Sean. All right, that is Sean Driscoll, who was the affable coach of the St. Mary's Spartans. They're up against Stoneham, 3 o'clock on Saturday, from Gillette. And as he said, Stoneham, seated number one and St. Mary's at number three, in the playoffs. And it's been an amazing run, amazing year, all the way along. Let me see here. So again, Bill DeWitt will be down there on Saturday, Kip Academy at 10 o'clock. St. John's Prep at 12:30 versus Springfield Central, and St. Mary's will be playing Stoneham at 3 o'clock. And then the two games after that, D3 Wakefield versus Milton and Steve Dombowski, and of course D2 Catholic Memorial against King Philip. And we will have a lot of that, thanks to our man Bill Newell, covering the D8, the D1, and the D6 Super Bowls from Gillette. And of course on Friday, the early evening game at 5:30, it's North Reading versus Shawshin Valley Tech. And again, two great schools there as well from, basically the area. So a lot going on with the North Shore. Tim and I are going to take a break. We'll come back and check in with Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night, so please stay with us.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
right, we're back on this North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night, Super Bowl week for the high schools, and another important week for basketball insider Mike Grenier and the Celtics. And Mike, welcome back.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate that. And you know what? While you mentioned the high school Super Bowl, I want to wish the St. John's Prep Eagles all the best this coming Saturday, I believe, against Springfield Central, a real powerhouse. And you know, I've known Brian St. Pierre for a long time. He does a great job with that program. And I know you guys have him on the air quite a bit. And so I want to wish the Eagles luck.
Well, Tim and I were just talking about Andre Tippett and the size of him. I've not met Andre Tippett.
But
I got to tell you a little story about Brian St. Pierre. A few years ago, I had never met Brian St. Pierre. I knew him, of course, from, you know, Boston College publicity and playing for the Falcons and so on. But I had never seen him, and I was sitting at a table for the Lynn Item sports banquet, their football banquet that they have at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was him. I was sitting beside this guy, and we had this little chat. And because I came in a little bit late, so I'm sitting there, and it was at the head table or whatever you call it. So
yeah.
Then Steve Krause starts to he starts to introduce the guest speaker, and he introduces Brian St. Pierre.
Yeah.
He stood up next to me, and it's like, holy cow, he went right to the ceiling.
Yeah.
He's a big guy.
5, I think. I actually remember him as a freshman at St. John's Prep when he was a starting quarterback, and he weighed about 140 pounds or something like that. And they weren't very good that year, the offensive line. And he took an absolute pounding in his first ever varsity start. But he kept coming back for more. And I just remember that. He was like maybe 14 or 15 years old. And I said, this kid's going to be okay, because he wasn't backing down. And sure enough, he became a great high school player, and they won a Super Bowl. And, of course, you know, he played at BC, and then, you know, he got a backup role in the NFL. So he's done very well for himself. He's a very intelligent guy, as you know, as well. So in any case, speaking of intelligence and great playing, the Celtics are right there at the top of the heap again, and we need to start talking about them, right?
You... I thought you were talking about me, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's you. Yeah. You know, I thought of you, actually, Tim. I know the UConn women are, like, number 3 in the world, and I think...
They were down early, and halftime came, and they just ran away with it.
Yep. Well, they're going to be good again, but in any case... Let's talk about the Celtics, Rick. I know now you threw a little curveball at me here, but I'm more than willing to ride with it. And that's, not only do we do Mike's Power 5 tonight, but I thought it was the interesting idea that you proposed about doing a sort of a Power 5 player ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be subjective, and I've looked over the list of players and what they've done this year, and I'm not basing it on what's happened the previous year or the previous 5 years or 10 years or whatever. Going with the guys who are doing well this year and leading their respective teams to good things. So I'm basing it on how they're performing individually, but also what are they providing for their team and what makes their teams more threatening to the Celtics or last year's reigning champs, the Golden State Warriors. So do you want to start with the teams, or do you want to start with... We should start with the teams, right? Because basketball is a team sport, Rick, right?
Yeah, let's do that. And I can compare and contrast it with what you've had in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, so we're gonna go with number 5. Number 5, we start always with the bottom of the list. I'm going to go with the Denver Nuggets at the number 5 spot.
Wow, they have fallen. Okay.
They've fallen a little bit.
Yep.
However, they still have a good record, 12-7, and they're the 6th-ranked offensive team in the league. And defensively, they're only ranked 24th. But the reason I like them is because they do have a good core unit of starters, and led by Jokic, who is going to be in my Power 5 players, because the guy is just a tremendous player. And as long as he's around and playing well for them in the playoffs, they're going to be a threat. So they'd be my number 5 team. Number 4, I tell you what, the Cleveland Cavaliers have climbed. They've had a very good year so far. They're 12-7, and or 13-7 now. And the thing I like about them, Rick, is when you look at their overall balance, their offensive team, as an offensive team, they rank 7th in the NBA. And as a defensive team, they rank 3rd. So overall, that's outstanding balance. And they have a... Obviously, their best newcomer is Donovan Mitchell, and he's made a huge difference. But a kid that no one knows about is this kid Darius Garland, who's another guard. And a couple of games that Donovan Mitchell sat out, Darius Garland had like 40 points in one game and 50 in another. So I think they're going to be around and maybe make some noise in the playoffs. So they're number four. Number three, the Phoenix Suns. They've done a great job without Chris Paul, who's been the leader for a long time as a point guard, has had one of the all-time great careers as a point guard. But he's been out since November 1st, and yet they're still winning. They're 13-6. They're now atop the rank, atop the standings in the Western Conference. And the thing you like about them is you got to love this. They rank number three in offense in the entire league, and they rank number five in defense. So that's a team that you can't ignore for the next 60 or 70 games and the playoffs. They're going to be there. And if and when Chris Paul comes back, they're going to be even better. So they got to be there at number three spot. And, of course, number two has to be the Milwaukee Bucks. I tell you what, Rick, I watched them last night, and they are so good. And the thing I like about them is they're number one team defensively in the entire league. And they're a middle-of-the-road offensive team so far, like 17th. But if you talk about winning championships with defense, then that's the team you have to look at being maybe in the NBA Finals in June. And so they're number two because of their defense and because Giannis is such a phenomenal player. And I also think the Milwaukee Bucks, Rick, and we can extend this conversation in a couple minutes maybe, but I also think they have the deepest team in the NBA. They're just unbelievable with their depth. And they don't even have Chris Middleton back, and he's an all-star, a guy who can average 22, 23, 24 points a game when he does come back. So that leaves the number one spot, and it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody around here. The Celtics, the Boston Celtics, were going for their ninth straight win at home tonight. I went to see them Friday night, Rick, against Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks, and I'm just so impressed with what they're doing both offensively and defensively. And they only rank 16th or 17th on defense, but Tim made a great point a week or two ago. He said when you're scoring 120 or 125 or 130 points a game, the other opposing team is taking the ball out of the basket a lot of times, and therefore they're getting more offensive opportunities. So, Tim, that was a great point. I'm glad you pointed that out. And they just, the last three opponents since we spoke last Monday, the Celtics have smoked them. They've scored 125 in one game and 121 in another one and 130 points last night. So they're still on fire, and they've had a lot of home games, and they're playing the Charlotte Hornets in a back-to-back tonight, having played last night. So that's the Power Five. The Celtics still at the top of the heap.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mike, I was watching the end of last night's game, and there were an awful lot of cheap buckets at the very end, the last 3 minutes. That really closed the score up to
right.
Make it look a little bit deceptive over how dominating the Celtics were up until that 3 minute point where basically there was no defense being played.
Well, right, and that's right. And Rick, I know you're concerned about the Celtics defense and all that, but I think Tim makes a good point there. They've had several blowouts, and in those blowouts, of course, the end of the bench gets to play, except for Blake Griffin, who I don't have no idea why he's on this team. But the end of the bench plays, and therefore teams somehow or sometimes pad their offense by scoring against the Celtics' deep reserves and making it a lot closer than the game actually is. So sometimes stats can be deceiving, so I think that's why the Celtics still need to improve on defense. However, middle of the pack at this point is okay. I think they're just going to keep getting better. But that offense is everybody else's nightmare. I mean, no one can stop this team. And even without Jason Tatum last night, they scored 130 points. So that's where the Power Five lies right there. And I want to see what you guys think at
this
point.
I'm glad you guys both mentioned that about the defense, because it was such a point of emphasis last year. You know, they made their bread with defense because it was so incredibly outstanding. And they didn't have the offense they have now. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense. The other thing is, Red Auerbach didn't care about statistics. I mean, you know, come on. Bill Russell could have scored a million points.
Right. Rick, it's still a good point you make about defense. Now, if you look, let's say the Celtics and the Bucks meet in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals, okay? So if the Celtics are a middle-of-the-pack defensive team, the number one offensive team, would you be picking them to win it, or would you be picking a Milwaukee Bucks team that finishes first in defense? You know, and everybody's mantra seems to be defense wins championships, and the Patriots won championships with defense, although Tom Brady helped a little bit, you know. You know, so I think they're such an even Steven, you know, statistically, one might cancel out the other, and I think it would be a great seven-game series if they play the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's just a dream matchup, and right now, the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, they're playing great, and the Celtics are even playing a little bit better. So that's where we stand. Other teams obviously will get better. I'm looking for Philly to get better when they get Embiid back from injury. But they've won two or three in a row without Embiid, without Tyrese. They've won two or three games in a row without three starters. And Embiid is having a great year. So Philly might be in the picture come April and May right now with the injuries they have to James Harden and two other starters. They're not in the picture, but you know, Miami might come up and join that Power Five at some point. But right now, they're not in the picture either.
You know, Mike, I just thought of an old story that there are lies, dim lies, and statistics.
I'm sorry.
Way back, remember that saying from way back?
Oh yeah,
lies, lies, and statistics.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, put the two teams in the court and let the ending fall where it may, because once you kick that, throw that ball up, all the stats go out the window. All the points per game don't matter. All the defense you can play don't matter. You've got to find a way simply to win the game. You got to find a combination of both to win the game. You got to make fewer mistakes than your opponent. And that's all it is.
Yeah, you're right. And of course, it's all about matchups. And of course, the matchups become much more magnified when it's head-to-head in a seven-game series as opposed to meeting a team just once or twice in the regular season. So, but at least at this point, the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks clearly are the teams to beat overall in the NBA. And when you start looking at the Western Conference, who might come out of there to face the Celtics or the Bucks or maybe a surprise team in the East? I think, you know, right now the Phoenix Suns are in the best position to be that team. So, that's where we are with the power.
Well, you're,
I tell you what, I love a potential Milwaukee-Boston matchup. Rick, how would you guys feel about that one?
Milwaukee, what would you say, Milwaukee and Boston?
Milwaukee-Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, of course, you know, we'd love to see the rematch. But I'm looking at your Power Five, and it's interesting that you've pretty much had the same guys for the last 3 weeks, except New Orleans has dropped out, Utah has dropped out,
right,
and Denver has fallen a little bit, but it's, where is it? Phoenix was there last week, so it's pretty much the same guys, just kind of moving on. But you've had one and two consistently since we started.
Right, and I think Phoenix has solidified its position just by, you know, winning the last few games and by being such a solid team both offensively and defensively. When you're ranked third in one category and fifth in another category, offense and defense, you're going to be there. If you ride that sort of statistics throughout the season, you're going to be there at the end. I just think they have a really solid team. And the Devin Booker, who I well remember scoring 70 points against the Celtics a few years ago when he's a very young player, he's now the leader of that team. And they have a very good center in DeAndre Ayton, and they have a very good forward and in the kid who played at Villanova, Mikal Bridges. So they have a really good all-around team. And I don't think the Western Conference is quite as good as the Eastern Conference. And I think if you're looking at a team that's rising, and it scares you a little bit, but not so much at this point, it's still early, it's the Golden State Warriors. They've won seven of their last 10. Steph Curry is off to a tremendous start again, but they still have not been a consistent team. They're still just hovering around the 500 mark, but obviously they've gotten a lot better in the last eight or nine games, and they might be there at the end. You'd have to think they're going to be there fighting for finals again, because they have an all-around excellent team.
Mike, what was your take on the I'm going to switch channels here.
I'm sorry?
The Hunter Henry incompletion last week.
On what?
On the Hunter Henry incompletion.
Oh, my God. I thought, how many times, guys, have we seen a quarterback reach the ball over the goal line, and he gets it hit out of his hand, and it's an automatic touchdown.
Of course.
When I saw Hunter Henry, his hand solidly over the ball and extending it over the, I thought the play was over at that point.
Exactly.
So that's, I'm not like Gene Steratore or those guys back in the booth and saying, it's close, and they have all these technicalities. I just, with the naked eye, Rick, you like to say the eye test. I gave that one the eye test, and I give Hunter Henry a touchdown.
Oh, you know, it's like, how many times can you screw the pass? You know, it gets really sickening to watch these calls being made. And I'm surprised Belichick didn't go crazier. I really don't.
Well, he's so even. Yeah, he's so even keeled, right, Tim? We've seen that over the last 25 years or so. He's not one that's going to make a big issue out of anything, you know?
Yeah, his thing is, well, we left plays on the field. We shouldn't have had to rely on one play.
Right.
Which is understandable. But, I mean, you know, that one in the flow of that particular game, that was huge.
It was huge.
You know, Kelce had the exact same thing happen to him a couple of weeks ago in a game. He caught the ball. He got over the goal line, got yanked back into the field to play, dropped the ball, and the referees all said, oh, touchdown. Everybody said,
yeah, I don't get it. Yeah.
Because he crossed the plate, because that's the new rule.
Right, and Rick and Tim, how about a little bit later in that game, Mac Jones, there was an obvious face mask when he was trying to pass the ball, and they had to punt, I believe, on the next play, because the refs missed an obvious face mask that would have given the Patriots the first down on the key drive of the game. So, yeah, there was definitely some questionable play calling there. And because of that, the Patriots are now behind the eight ball as far as making the playoffs.
Well, there's still a game ahead of Tampa Bay, so that's all I'm looking at
that's
the moment.
That's true. Tampa Bay, that's by far the worst division.
There you go.
NFL.
Hey, Mike, what about your Power 5 individuals?
This is kind of fun to do with you guys, right?
Yep.
So here we go. I'm going to do, again, 5-4-3-2-1. Do it that way.
Okay.
And again, this is a bit subjective, okay? It's a bit subjective. So I'm going to go with Ja Morant, who is just a great young player on a really terrific young team. To me, they're the most spectacular team in the NBA. They're kind of erratic because they can give up points in a bunch, but they can also score 26 points in a row. And they're definitely going to be in the playoffs. And Ja Morant is averaging like 28.5 points a game. He's shooting 47% from the floor, 37% on threes. He's averaging like 7.6 assists and 6.4 rebounds, even though he looks like he weighs about 155. He's probably one of the fastest, if not the fastest player in the NBA. He plays fast, and because he's the point guard, his team plays fast. They're an exciting team to watch. They made a good playoff run last year, and they have the potential, to me, they have the potential to make the finals. So they're that talented. They just got back their big man, Jaren Jackson, who's a great power forward, a three-point shooter. So, but to me, Ja Morant obviously makes that engine go, makes the team go. He's my number five guy in my personal Power Five. Next for me has to be Donovan Mitchell, who's made a tremendous impact since coming from the Utah Jazz now to Cleveland. Whoever thought the Cleveland Cavaliers would be a threat? At this point, they have been a threat, and he's averaging a little over 30 points a game. And he's had a great start to the season. He's turned the whole culture of that team around, thinking they can win a lot of games this year. And so he's there for now through 20 games because they're off to a great start, and they're going to make the playoffs and do well. My number three guy, I think, has to be I'm going to have to go with Devin Booker. Of the Phoenix Suns because he's the best player on the best team in the Western Conference. He's still a young player at age 26, 27, but he's averaging like 27 points a game. He makes them go. He's a great outside shooter. He's a penetrator. He's a finisher, capable of going off for 40 or 50 in any given game. And he's going to keep the Phoenix Suns up in a standing. So he's my number three guy. Now my number two guy has to be Jason Tatum. Obviously, we know what he's done so far. He sat out last night, and even though the Celtics still won big, you know, they're going to need him for the rest of the way here. I mean, he could take an occasional game off. However, I think he's elevated his game to another level this year to the point where he has to be considered a top 5 or 10 player overall. Right now, to me, he's in my Power 5 top two. He's he's the second guy, number two guy. And I think my number one guy has to be Giannis Antetokounmpo, because I take him over Tatum only because he's such a ferocious rebounder, and because of his height and his length, he's a better defensive player. And, of course, he's going to get you more rebounds. He's going to block the shots. He's virtually unstoppable when he takes it to the basket, even though sometimes Rick and Tim, he takes advantage of the rules. He'll get away with taking three or four steps to the basket. But, you know, he gets the superstar call, so more power to him if he gets away with it. And, of course, he makes his team go, and his team is one of the top two teams in the NBA right now. So I think that's I got to go with him as my number one guy, and apologies to Celtics fan, but I think, obviously, number two spot for Tatum, not a bad place to be when you're talking about the upper echelon of NBA players. Tatum is doing it all. I mean, he's getting to the foul line more often this year. He's averaging still over 30 points a game. He's like the number five or six scorer overall in the entire NBA. So he's up there. I just think in the long run, Giannis offers a little bit more because of his, you know, his overall size. So I just, guys may want to take issue with that. So go ahead.
No. He's such a throwback to an earlier time in the NBA. He plays inside. That's what I love about him.
Right, Rick. He looks.
Every time there's a ball in the air, he's looking to rebound it, whether it's on the offensive or the defensive end. He changes shot. He's such a dominant physical guy because of his height, because of his length, because of his willingness to challenge, to take on guys going to the hoop. You know, there's nothing he can't do defensively, and there's very little he can't do offensively. And he doesn't spend a lot of worrying about taking threes. He likes to work down low, which is great when he's big.
You're right, Timmy. He is a throwback to the days of the true NBA centers, except he's such, well, they call him the Greek freak for a reason. He's so athletic, he's so skilled that he'll take two or three strides from the basically, and he's at the basket because he's so incredibly long. And he's so incredibly athletic. And the one flaw in his game, and I pointed this out last weekend, is that he's still not a good free throw shooter. He's shooting a career low 60% from the foul line. And that's not going to hurt them so much in the regular season, but in close games in the playoffs, that could hurt the Bucks if he's still shooting it that poorly come the playoff time. So, you know, that's, you know, I think Giannis is phenomenal. And also, too, Tim, he's a great team, much like Tatum and Mike, a lot of things like Steph Curry and guy. He's very much a team-oriented guy. He gives credit to his teammates. He trusts his teammates. He talks about the team. I love his overall attitude. Rick, what do you think about that?
Well, I think... go ahead, Tim.
Rick, go ahead.
Oh, okay. You can't argue with any of that, and he's the consummate professional, and anybody who has some humility with egos like these guys have to have is someone I really appreciate, and it's great to hate this guy because you love him as a basketball player.
Right, exactly.
And so, I think the thing about your Power Five that interests me, Mike, is who's not on it, and I want to see if that adds, you know, later on during the season, if some of those really familiar names creep into it.
Well, you know, I mean, like I said, Curry's tough to keep out of. You talking about the individual or the team?
Yeah, the individual. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Curry. Like I said, he's easy to pick, but the team still is not.
Right.
Like I said, they're trending upwards, but because they're still hovering around that 500 mark, I can't put him. Like I said, it's subjective too. If you went strictly by the stats, he'd be there.
I have to ask you, Mike, before we start winding down. I've been wanting to ask you all night again about Malcolm Brogdon because
I love him. Especially now on nights when like a Derek White has to take a night off or if Jason Tatum has to take a night off and Brogdon gets more minutes at the guard position. I love the way he orchestrates the offense in a different way than Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart is defensive-oriented, and he still runs the offense. But Malcolm Brogdon is better at taking it to the basket, I think, than Marcus Smart. And, you know, he'll get you 16, 18 points almost every night because he's just a bit more consistent shooter. So I love both players, Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon. I just think Brogdon is, you know, a terrific coming off the bench as the first guy off the bench. I mean, he could easily start for the Celtics, but you're not going to deprive Marcus Smart of that starting position. He's a veteran. He's a leader, team captain type of guy. He keeps the other guys in line, so to speak. He'll challenge anybody. But Malcolm Brogdon is one heck of a guy to bring in as a sixth man. He kind of reminds you, you know, the great six men, the Celtics, you know, Frank Ramsey in the early days, Havlicek. Brogdon is in a great position with the Celtics where he doesn't feel to have the pressure of starting, but he can come off the bench and make a huge impact. And that's what he's done so far. Mm-hmm. He's averaging about 14 points a game. He's shooting it well. He surprised me as a three-point shooter. He's actually been shooting the three better than I thought he would.
Well, you know, I turned on the, like I said, the last few minutes of the Suns game last night. The game ended, and Brogdon's walking off the court, and Scal is going, yeah, and he had 24 points. I'm thinking, now there's a reason you can give Tatum a rest.
That's right. That's right.
And put it in the basket.
And, you know, my wife, who watches the Celtics, like, she had season tickets for, like, 30. She watches Malcolm Brogdon and says, he's so poker-faced, Rick.
Yes, I was going to ask you that. Does he have any emotion at all? He never smiles? He never complains?
Yeah, I've seen him smile a couple times post-game after they've won.
I haven't.
Don't you love that business-like approach on the court where he doesn't get too high or too low? Marcus Smart is more of an emotional player, and that's fine. He's still an effective player. But Malcolm Brogdon, that's just his personality, I believe. You know, so I love to see him being that even-keeled on an 82-game season.
Exactly. Tim, how about some final thoughts here, because we got to wrap this thing up.
Oh, yeah, we just... It's strange. We're at a point where everybody's winning in the Boston sports world.
You know,
the Pats lost, but they gave us an incredible lesson on Thanksgiving night. They still have
a shot,
a record, and we don't have a whole lot to complain about.
Well, that's right. That's right.
Just listen to Boston radio. They'll complain for you.
Yeah. Rick, if I could point out one more thing, Luka Doncic, of course, is one of the great individual players in the NBA. He's averaging, he's leading the league and scoring at 33 points a game. But I did attend Friday night's game with a press credential, and I watched Doncic, especially when he and Tatum guarded each other. Now, get this, guys, right? When Doncic was guarded by Tatum, he scored 2 points. He had 2 turnovers. Tatum blocked one of his shots, okay? When Doncic guarded Tatum, Tatum scored 15 points. 15! So he outscored him 15-2. He had 3 or 4 assists, a couple of rebounds. He just absolutely annihilated Doncic in a head-to-head matchup. And mercifully, for Dallas' sake, Coach Jason Kidd eventually took him off of Tatum because it was such a mismatch. Doris Burke nationally was saying how great Doncic had a 42-point game that night.
Yeah.
Celtics won easily, but Tatum is a much better player than Luka Doncic.
I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because it speaks to the overall ability and leadership of Jason Tatum that he's doing that now, because he has said... you know, Marcus Smart always wants to get the top scorer, but Tatum says, I want to guard the best.
Yep. And it was just so interesting to watch that head-to-head matchup because on a national level, Doncic, you know, he's still a young player and he can give you 40 points however, he's not a great defensive player and also too, he isolates with the ball way too much and doesn't get his teammates involved. Whereas Tatum has taken that next step in getting his teammates involved, getting to the foul line more often this year. And to me, it's no contest right now between Doncic and maybe people on the national level might think, hey, who's this former writer from the Salem News? But I'll take Jason Tatum in a matchup against Doncic every day of the week, Monday through Sunday.
Hey, Coach, wrap it up for us, will you?
Well, Mike, once again, it's always a blast talking to you and picking your mic, because I know mine's pretty well picked over.
So next week, will Nick, Rick, if you want
to... top five. How about this?
Yeah.
How about this? Let's do a bottom five.
We could do that. You know, the Lakers would be there, right?
Hopefully.
We'll do that next week, maybe.
Okay.
Teams, why aren't they playing better than the Lakers and some of these other teams?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Mike, I second what Tim says. A font of information, but done in a fun way and in a good-natured way, like unlike some of the people in local media in Boston. I appreciate that because we can have fun and we can recognize that even the guys we can't stand are tremendous athletes.
That's true. And not only do we recognize the pros, but we could give shout-outs to St. John's Prep and Brian St. Pierre like you did, Rick. And, you know, I've known Brian for a long time, and we follow those local kids closely as well. And, you know, I know the basketball tryout started today for all our high school teams, and I get excited about that as well.
Yep. Hockey began today as well. Okay,
yeah,
Mike,
exactly.
We'll do it again next week. Thank you so much.
That was great. You take care, guys.
Be well, Mike.
Night, Tim.
All right. That's Mike Grenier, a sports historian, sports writer, sports journalist. And you're right, Tim, right now, everybody does have a winning record, including the Patriots.
Yep.
So it's good. It's all good. All right, Coach, we'll do it again next week.
All right, my friend. We will talk to you.
All right, you have a nice week, safe week, and have a good weekend.
All right, buddy.
All right, Tim, thank you.
Yep.
Okay, that is our ambassador of goodwill and our super sports analyst, Tim Kearns. Bill Proposky is our engineer and producer. Bill Newell is he's really our general manager, actually, and he is working on the Salem News Sports Writers podcast tonight that will be dropped tomorrow. Among other things, we've got a lot of high school Super Bowl previews coming up this week, so please stay with us, and keep coming back to the website. And if you're listening to this recording, we're going to be working on seeing why it wasn't able to play live on some devices. I don't understand that. But anyway, story for another day. Thank you for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend, a great Thanksgiving. And as we enter the holiday season here and the winter sports seasons for high school sports, interviews coming up with athletic directors, hockey coaches, and basketball coaches as well. So on behalf of Tim Kearns and Bill Newell and Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good day, good evening, good night, good morning, and do the right thing. Be well.